When news hit that Saudi Arabia was elected to have a status at the UN, many could not believe it, saying that Saudi Arabia was a dictatorship that should not have UN status. In this edition of the debate, we'll look at why Saudi Arabia, a kingdom in which people have no rights, no elections, or no parliament, was elected to the UN Commission, something that was discussed at the European Parliament.
The recent vote to allow Saudi Arabia to join the UN Commission on the Status of Women was described in the European Parliament as repugnant and totally unacceptable. 54 countries took part in the secret vote, 47 endorsed the move, including, it's thought, 5 EU member states.
What possible justification could there be for EU member states to endorse the world's leading oppressor of women, now as a promoter of gender equality? In one word, trade.
The European Parliament debate heard that women in Saudi Arabia need permission from men to study, work, marry, travel, and of course they are not yet permitted to drive.
This is not a country that we should be listening to on the UN Commission on the Status of Women. This is a country that we should be condemning, and we should condemn this appointment in the strongest possible terms.
A number of MEPs also accuse Riyadh of supporting terrorist groups, including Daesh, through its promotion of Wahhabism in schools and mosques around the world. Their concerns might be well-founded, according to experts.
It includes, you know, financing of different civil society organisations, some mosques, the financing of some clerics. In some cases, you have Saudi Arabian imams in certain mosques.
In addition to the aforementioned issues, members of the European Parliament are highly critical of Britain and the United States for selling billions of pounds and dollars worth of weapons to Saudi Arabia that are being used to kill thousands of civilians in Yemen, a country now experiencing a major humanitarian crisis.
Many EU legislators have made the point that the unwavering support given to Riyadh by Washington and London is morally reprehensible, given the Saudi regime's appalling record on many fronts. Jerome Hughes, Press TV, at the European Parliament, Brussels.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, we have Catherine Shugnam, director of the Shafaqna Institute for Middle Eastern Studies, who joins us from London. And we have Jihad Markata, who is a lecturer and political analyst who joins us from Beirut. I'd like to welcome you both. And Jihad Markata, let me first start with you. If you can explain to us what the screening process may be for Saudi Arabia to have been elected to the UN Women's Rights Commission.
I'm the wrong person to ask. I find it difficult to explain. The Women Human Rights Commission is a woman thing. It's about the rights of women. And frankly, I do not agree.
You don't agree? Okay. Well, Catherine Shugnam, what does this appointment reflect on the behalf of the UN?
What does it reflect? It's a good question. I think it just reflects the pitiful state that the United Nations has actually reached today. I mean, you know, the idea that you could have a country such as Saudi Arabia, never mind the fact that it's a theocracy, you know, but the simple fact that Saudi Arabia doesn't even recognize, you know, women as human beings in that they have rights, you know, and should be allowed to be conducting their affairs, you know, the way they want, the way they wish, you know, as people, you know. Is just telling you that the United Nations has no clue whatsoever what it is doing anymore, and that the only thing that the UN is responding to right now is money and how much political traction one can have. And Saudi Arabia right now is lobbying enough, you know, Western capitals, I guess, Washington and London, of course, to try to push their agenda and to try to reach, you know, the highest office in the international community. But this is ridiculous. I mean, I don't think that anyone is under any impression that this seat was actually bought, and that, of course, Saudi Arabia is in no position to be speaking on behalf of women's rights, never mind promoting women's rights, when in their own country, again, women are less than nothing. They are actually treated as commodities that could be traded off in the marketplace. And, you know, never mind democracy. I mean, the last time that Saudi Arabia had a democracy was about 14 centuries ago, when they were debating, you know, who should kill a certain someone. So come on, you know, there's a point in time where this is becoming a joke now, and I don't think that anyone with, you know, I would say two brain cells to work, to rub together, would be able to defend or even, you know, try to rationalize what it is that United Nations is doing when it comes to Saudi Arabia. I think that the Saudi have lost their mind. You know, they are completely megalomaniac, and they are trying to assert themselves as king over the international community. And very soon, I imagine that King Salman or his son would ask to be crowned, you know, king of the United Nations. I'm waiting for that announcement, because come on.
Well, let's get you, Jihad Markota, to defend and rationalize Saudi Arabia for us.
Well, first of all, I said I don't agree because within the rules of United Nations, women's rights are very different from what they are in Saudi Arabia. So for to have Saudi Arabia on this panel, I said I don't agree. On the other hand, one must understand there are very different ways of treating women in very different countries. There are, it's a society in Saudi Arabia, it's a different society in various countries in the world. So you cannot impose on Saudi Arabia the rules that exist, say, in England or in France or the UK or whatever. So my point is, one must respect the way people deal with women, as long as women's rights are not subordinated. Now, in Saudi Arabia, it so happens that its society is such that women's rights are not the same as they are, say, in other countries. However, when you are talking about rights, one must understand and look at human rights all over the place, particularly in Saudi Arabia, of course, but also in Iraq, in Yemen, in Iran, in Syria, and so on and so forth. So I'm terribly sorry to say it is not an issue of the way Saudi Arabia deals with its women, which is a society, which is a civilization thing, but it is an issue which is not comparable to the rest of the West.
Right. Well, the thing here is, Catherine Shokdam, we're not going to get into a discussion so much about this appointment on the issue of women rights, but more about the appointment by an international body and what it's supposed to represent, namely the UN, and having this regime be appointed to its body. Of which, quite ironically, there was a report that came out by the Henry Jackson Society that says that Saudi Arabia has been trying to promote Wahhabism abroad, and it has accused Saudi Arabia for its sponsor of terrorism. So when you put that into the picture, how could Saudi Arabia then become part of the UN?
Well, again, I think there's a desire to try to rationalize, things that can't be reconciled. So on the one hand, you have the international community that is desperately trying to present and portray Saudi Arabia as a legitimate power, as a power, that has a role to play within the international community, trying to, again, forward this idea, ridiculous idea, I must say, that Saudi Arabia is a good idea. And that, its leadership is actually good and, fair to the world, and that, they would, participate and integrate, and everybody would be happy singing Kumbaya around, the fire camp. Reality is, Saudi Arabia is a violent theocracy. It's a reactionary power that is living and breathing on sectarianism, on violence against, different religious minorities, against different ethnic groups, against, of course, women. And whoever they perceive as lesser. So you have a problem here where you have basically an attempt to institutionalize terror and try to give it, a good face, to try to brand it as something that is good, as something that is not terrible or repugnant and repulsive, when in fact reality and everything on the ground is telling you, otherwise. So it's very difficult because now we're living in a state of dichotomy where the international community is so divorced from reality, and so intent on selling us an idea, a brand, a propaganda, that it's actually completely losing track and losing sight of the fact that the people are not buying into it anymore. It's impossible to sit here today. I mean, the EU we're quite clear on this. It's impossible for any type of official or state representative to actually defend or even explain, you know, the reality that is Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is, you know, an aberration onto the face of the earth. You know, politically, religiously, institutionally, I mean, there is nothing that you could defend or even try to discuss in reasonable terms when it comes to Saudi Arabia. People are still getting their head chopped off just because they're breathing in the wrong direction in Saudi Arabia. You know, so never mind if you happen to be a Shia Muslim in Qatif because you were born, you know, as an apostate and you should be killed anyway. So, I mean, when you have a country such as this, to be sitting anywhere near an international community is an insult to the rest of the world. And, you know, forget, we need to stop comparing Saudi Arabia to other countries and try to rationalize Saudi Arabia against other countries, because I know that the idea is that we live in a binary world and when we talk about Saudi Arabia, we have to talk about Iran. Let's stop this, okay? Iran is a country, Saudi Arabia is another country, and the two don't have to exist against one another. So stop trying to explain Saudi Arabia, and I'm speaking to your guest, you know, by trying to bring Iran or Iraq or Syria in the picture, because nobody is really listening, because it doesn't make any point whatsoever. It's not helping towards the conversation.
Judd Mercado, go ahead.
I would like to have as much time as a lady, but what question do you have?
Question I have for you then, let's move on to the issue of Wahhabism. This has been something that caught the attention during the discussions that the EU had in its parliaments. I thought this piece of news was an old piece of news, but the EU decided that they're going to have a session on it. Okay? So, obviously, it's a concern for them. They mentioned Wahhabism about that inside their
very
meeting.
Good.
Go ahead.
Very excellent, excellent. It is the issue I wanted to talk about. Wahhabism is a way of conducting your religion. It is not a terrorist organization. The way people are depicting it is a terrorist organization. The way, if some terror organizations are using Wahhabism in an extreme way, in a way to conduct war against the West, it is they who are conducting war against the West. It is not Wahhabism which is calling for war against the West. And also, when the same Wahhabist people are conducting war against the birthplace of Wahhabism, because Daesh is conducting war against Saudi Arabia. What is very funny and interesting about all of that is that Qatar, which is helping those people who are conducting war against Saudi Arabia, who are Wahhabists, and Qatar, as you know, is supporting al-Nusra and Daesh, they are conducting war against Saudi Arabia, and they are using their money to support Wahhabism against Wahhabism. So this Wahhabism issue is just like what do you call it, some kind of threat or some kind of, forget it. So basically, you cannot use Wahhabism. It's like using the Christian religion, or it's like using any faction of Christianity or any faction of Islam or Shia Islam or so on. In Shia Islam, you have extremists. In Shia Islam, you have positive people. So why don't people use Shia Islam as a way of manifesting their anger? So no. I'm terribly sorry. There is a difference between Wahhabism and Wahhabism, and there is a difference. Yes, there is. I know Shias who are extremists, and there are Shias who are not extremists.
Sitting on the Wahhabi side, of course you do.
Okay.
Yes, of course I do.
I'm not trying to
give you a lesson someday.
I don't want to take time away from you. I'm sorry to jump in. We're just going to listen to some viewer comments, and we'll get right back to the debate. Let's take a listen.
The UN is a pathetic fallacy. Saudi Arabia is one of the worst countries and does not deserve any respect. This shows what the United Nations is exactly all about. It's surprising and deeply appalling. How much did the Saudi regime pay the UN to get that position?
Just some of the view comments. I do have to make an apology here, Catherine Chagnon, before I come to you, and that is that I said the EU was discussing Wahhabism. I'm not too sure if that was discussed or not, but they criticized Saudi Arabia for its sponsor of terrorism. So my apologies. Catherine Chagnon, go ahead.
Well, I would like to respond to, you know, your guest comments about Qatar. So I'm not going to argue here and say that Qatar is innocent, because it's not. It has promoted the Muslim Brotherhood. But to actually make the case, and, you know, very interestingly enough, just a few months ago, before Qatar was declared a pariah, I remember many political analysts, you know, singing the praise of Qatar, saying that Qatar was such a progressive country, you know, trying to help Saudi Arabia, you know, especially towards Yemen, in its effort towards war and occupation. But to say that Wahhabism is actually not radical. Wahhabism is radical in itself. It's an aberration. It's a school of thought that was born two centuries ago that has, you know, that has brought and promoted bloodshed across the world, that has disappeared the world religious heritage. And to say that they're not calling for bloodshed is ridiculous, because only very recently, just a few months ago, you had the Grand Mufti, you know, of Saudi Arabia in Mecca, that actually stood there on holy ground and called for the destruction of all churches and all other shrines, because it was an insult, you know, to their faith. So excuse me if I sit here and I just disagree with you. And of course you have to bring, you know, sectarianism, and of course you have to bring Shia Islam, because you cannot defend Wahhabism and the ideology it stands for, you know, if you don't, again, try to explain it against other people's faith. So to say that Shia Islam is violent is simply not true. You know, Shia Islam, if anything, has been the one school of thought within Islam that has systematically, and I'm not taking away from anybody else, systematically and on principles, defending the oppressed of the world, whether they're Sunni, Shia, Christian, Alawite, doesn't matter, because it's a principle. Because there's the idea of humanity in Islam that we should not lose sight of. And Wahhabism is denying people the right to their own humanity, the right to their religious freedom. And this is the reality. Is there any church in Saudi Arabia? No, they all have been destroyed. Is there any synagogues in Saudi Arabia? No, they have been destroyed. You want to speak about Iran? Yes, there are synagogues. Yes, there are churches. And yes, Sunni and Shia live happily together, because there is no issue of sectarianism, because people don't really care. You know, it's a matter of personal preferences. So to sit here and argue that Wahhabism is a good idea, of course it's not a good idea. No one likes Wahhabism. Sunni Islam doesn't like Wahhabism. Shia Islam doesn't like Wahhabism. Christianity and Judaism do not like Wahhabism either, because it's a cult of death. And all they do all day, every day, is call for bloodshed and destruction. Nobody likes them. So for you to defend them is actually quite appalling.
Wahhabism and terrorism seem to come into the equation, Jihad Mercado, when it comes to Saudi Arabia and its sponsor of it. And of course, Wahhabism being that type that is behind the association. Why is Saudi Arabia associated so much, with ample evidence out there, that they support terrorism?
Saudi Arabia is associated with Wahhabism because Wahhabism is at the base of Saudi Arabia. So that's on the one hand. On the other, the terrorism using Wahhabism as a means to expand their ideas and their ideology is not at all similar, but people have a tendency to confuse the two. With regards to other issues raised by the lady, I would like to say that extremism is the issue, not Wahhabism is the issue. When you take things, you have extremes and extremists amongst the Jews, you have extremists amongst the Christians, you have extremists amongst the Shias and the Sunnis and whatever you want. Extremism exists, and this is what we have to fight against, not Wahhabism. Wahhabism is a way to come to reduce extremism to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is not, we have plenty of Sunni Muslims here in Lebanon who are not extremists at all, and who may or may not be Wahhabists, but they are not extremists at all in the way which is described by Daesh and whatnot. So don't give me that Saudi Arabia and Wahhabism is extremist, because it is not.
So
it depends who is using it the same way
question.
As other. I'm sorry, let me continue. I'm sorry, it depends who is using it
no,
and
I
for what reason they are
I have
using
a question
it.
For you.
Go ahead, Catherine Shardam, your question,
John McCarthy. Why is it, so if you say that Wahhabism is not the problem and there's no link whatsoever with the ideology of terror, explain to me why the Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia 2 years ago actually sat during an interview, I think it was with the BBC, explaining that the only real difference in between Daesh and Wahhabism was that Daesh was actually taking things a little bit too far in terms of corporal punishment. So he wasn't referring to the theology of Wahhabism. He was explaining that maybe they shouldn't chop so many heads. You know, maybe they should be kinder and not burn people alive, but, you know, go back to the old way and just crucify them, you know, as you do in Saudi Arabia, because you chop off people's head and then you crucify them for good measure.
I will explain to you.
Okay, go ahead, John McCarthy.
I will explain to you. Have you heard about the recent declaration of Al-Azhar? Al-Azhar,
oh yes, I heard when they denounced Wahhabism as not being part of Sunni Islam. Yeah, I recall that.
John McCarthy.
Okay, so you know about the Al-Azhar declaration about women and so on. So basically,
I recall the section where Al-Azhar actually declared that Wahhabism was not part of Sunni Islam. I recall that one.
Okay, we're going to try to get John McCarthy back. Catherine Shagdam, unfortunately, it seems like we may have lost them. We have just a little bit of time left. Catherine Shagdam, the German foreign minister recently talked about how Saudi Arabia has supported extremism, and it has come in the form of the mosques, of which almost around the same time the German intelligence ministry came out and issued a warning saying that Saudi Arabia is playing an increasingly destabilizing role in the Middle East. You have the EU that has come out voicing concern about Saudi Arabia, and of course with this new young prince being an ascender to the throne. Do you think that the path that Saudi Arabia is taking with this new prince, for example, in his new position, is going to wreak havoc, especially given the fact that Trump now appears in full support of him?
Most likely. I mean, if you look at the way that, you know, Saudi Arabia has conducted itself over the past 2-3 years, it's very belligerent, very aggressive, not just militarily and politically, but now ideologically, where, you know, Europe, never mind the Middle East, have been inundated by, you know, the literature that Wahhabism is carrying, and it's very violent. And of course, it has, you know, pushed young people towards radicalization. They have been indoctrinated, you know, to this Wahhabist agenda and complex ideology that is so far removed from Islam that it doesn't even look like Islam anymore, because they're promoting bloodshed. And this is, of course, is destabilizing, because all they do every day is to promote the idea of sectarianism, the idea of divide, that people have to be labeled and classified according to ethnicity or religion, and that they have to exist against other people and massacre them. So it is very dangerous, and America is playing with fire here.
Thank you for that, Catherine Shagdam, director of the Shafak Institute for Middle Eastern Studies. Prior to that, we had John McCarthy, lecturer and political analyst from Beirut. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate from Mikhail Vitali. The entire team of the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.